This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Spoiler number one is Dr. Lee Frantz. It stinks.
What is going on?
Episode 54, submission number 1233, the Mr. Ed Unsold 2004 pilot with Sherman Helmsley. The Mr. Ed Unsold 2004 pilot with Sherman Helmsley was an unsold pilot for Fox TV.
This is a lot right there. Fox did this?
And Fox didn't want this?
Wow, it must be terrible.
Wait, you mean the same Fox that dumped Family Guy after three seasons?
They did not. The same Fox that decided that every other Friday they were going to have a When Blanks Do Blank special.
When Blanks Do Blank. What is this, Match Game?
No, that was another pilot on Fox. True story.
It was a Match Game pilot for Fox?
There was a Match Game pilot for Fox!
Yeah, what the blank? It was with Fred Willard's host. And Randy West announced it.
I have not seen a clip, but as soon as I find one, it's going on the list.
The only clip I've seen is the open.
But yeah, that Fox, they did not want this show, which means to tell me it must be terrible.
You're right on the nose there. And I'm not even putting the opening in because the opening is like 5 seconds long. And I'm not like, you know, pissing on the legacy of the original Mr. Red with the theme.
No, we're not. This is not good at all.
No, it's not good at all.
Spoiler, I lied.
Okay, so who did they get to star in the particulars? We already mentioned that Sherman Helmsley is the voice of your titular Palomino.
Hold up, Chico. What is Mr. Ed exactly?
He's a horse.
Wait. Say it again.
He's a horse.
Wait,
Mr.
No.
Mr. Ed is a horse.
No, you mean Mr. Ed's a horse.
He's a horse. Mr. Ed's a horse.
Yeah.
But he hasn't met Mike Francesa, so what kind of a horse is he? Fox commissioned a pilot in 2004 for Mr. Ed with Sherman Helmsley as the voice of Mr. Ed and playing the role of Wilbur, David Allen Bash. Now, if you're like me, you're going... Who'd that guy be?
Who that guy be indeed, Chico?
Future installment, Three Sisters. And everything else is just him as that guy from that thing. He's a very classic that guy from that thing. He actually played the ESPN boxing commentator in the movie Real Steel.
Oh, the robot boxer movie Real Steel with Hugh Jackman, which we'll cover on a spin-off podcast. It was a thing in the movies.
Yes, the very same.
Oh, we should also note that unlike the original TV show where the character's name was Wilbur Post, this Wilbur is Wilbur Pope.
What? So,
Wilbur Pope. So at least they haven't sullied the legacy by using the same name.
They're not going to just poop on the legacy of Alan Young there.
No, yeah. They're not going to crap all over Alan Young's legacy.
No, it's not proper honoring of Alan Young's legacy like having David Tennant voice Scrooge McDuck in the DuckTales reboot.
Hey, David Tennant owns that role, okay?
That's why I was complimenting David Tennant.
Oh, okay.
I was complimenting him because he's
Scottish. He's Scottish.
Yes, that's the joke. That's the whole thing. He's Scottish. Like, Alan Young was Scottish, right?
I don't know if Alan Young was... Well, let me take a look here. Alan Young was... Yeah. British-Canadian.
Okay, so... Okay.
Close enough!
Close enough! They're both... Isn't Scotland part of the UK?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Unless you're listening from Scotland, in which case the answer is obviously no.
Thanks a lot, Chico.
Oh, thank you for that clarification.
So, David Allen Batch plays Wilbur, and like the original series, he's the only one who knows that Mr. Ed can talk.
Oh my god. A talking horse?
A talking horse.
Oh.
Talking horse. But hey, Greg, this one's going to really blow your mind. You know who played the role of Carlotta Pope? They didn't name the wife Carol. They named him Carlotta. You know who played his wife?
Yes, because I mentioned it a couple episodes ago. And well, then it's going to be a flashback.
Oh, yeah. And you know who else was in that pilot, baby?
Looks like Davey Presley, but I don't know.
Sherilyn Fenn from Twin Peaks. So you know what that means? Yes, it gives me another excuse to talk about Twin Peaks on this podcast.
Yeah, Chico, I said it a couple episodes ago. It was Sherilyn Fenn, Audrey frickin' Horn herself.
I thought you had more to go with that. Okay.
No. But I got something. I got something that's going to blow your mind later on when we discuss who else was in the cast.
Go on.
Who played the daughter in this pilot?
Obviously somebody young, blonde, and ditzy.
Yeah, Sarah Paxton.
Well, hold on. Shut up. Are you talking about Sarah Paxton from Future Installment? Murder in the First?
No, I was talking about Sarah Paxton, who was a child panelist on Future Installment Small Talk.
Are you talking about Sarah Paxton from Future Installment The Beautiful Life, TBL?
Yeah, her!
She was in a lot of Future Installment Pepper Dennis. That Sarah Paxton? She played, and she also played Aquamarine in the Patreon spinoff podcast It Was a Thing at the Movies.
Co-starring JoJo. Oh, yes. But hey, guys, you're not going to believe what Sarah Paxton was also in. Because are you ready for this? You know what she was in?
What was she in?
She was in Twin Peaks The Return!
What?
Yes, she plays the wife of Bill Shaker, played by Ethan Suplee, and they encounter Agent Cooper as Ducky Jones in the Silver Mustang Casino! So you know what that means? If freaking Bill and... Hold on a second.
Breathe, Greg. Breathe, Greg. I know how you feel about Twin Peaks.
Okay. We're losing him.
Oh no.
If Bill and Candy Shaker weren't distracting Dougie Coop, you know what that would have meant?
No 30 super jackpots?
If they didn't distract him, it would mean that Myrtle from Superstar wouldn't have an extra mega jackpot.
Oh, there you go.
She would have had two mega jackpots instead of one. Damn you, Ethan Suplee and Sarah Paxton. Damn you.
Aw. Okay, and rounding out the family is Blake Woodruff playing Danny Pope. He wasn't in much.
No.
And there's one other actor who shows up on this pilot. Garrett Dillahunt appears as Jim Hendry, who is the person who owned the farm that the Popes purchased. And he shows up every now and then. But also, he shows up in, guess what? Future installment, Terminator, The Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Oh, yeah. Now that means I'm going to have to buy it on Blu-ray now. Thank you, Mike.
Well, you were going to buy it on Blu-ray anyway.
That's
exactly.
True.
Exactly.
That's true. I mean, I already have the first Terminator movie on Blu-ray anyway with the Deadpool slipcover.
Well, he also had a recurring role on also future installment, Maximum Bob.
What the hell is Maximum Bob?
I thought it's on the list.
I don't know. Oh, he played the role of roles in future installment, The Book of Daniel. He played Jesus, y'all.
Oh, amazing.
Okay, Maximum Bob. This is from IMDb. A Twin Peaks-like series. Not even joking. That's the first line. Maximum Bob is an ultra-right-wing conservative judge in Florida who has a psychic ex-marine show mermaid for a wife.
The fuck?
I'm just reading what I see here. The sheriff is a widower, her ballroom dances, the public defender is a spitfire from Miami, and somehow there's a family of truly odd individuals all with the same type of glasses. The jury's out on the sanity level, but it is based on Elmore Leonard, after all. I think this is on ABC. I remember this.
I remember this.
Seven episodes, and I swore that we had this on the list.
Did we?
I'm checking. I'm checking your master list.
Hold on. It just
rings a bell. Hold on.
It's not. What was that show I was amazed about with the lawyer that got shot? Blind Justice.
There you go.
Blind Justice, which is the stupidest premise of a television show ever. A police detective gets shot and he becomes blind. And now he must solve crimes while blind. What a stupid fucking premise for a show.
Well, let's talk about this show, because lest you think this is all about Wilbur and Ed, and for a large part of it, it is. This is really the story of Wilbur's daughter, Amanda, who is too bad and bougie for New York City. So Wilbur moves the entire family out to this farm, where they meet this horse, and Wilbur finds Mr. Ed's dirty little secret in that, well, he can talk.
What?
A talking horse?
A talking horse!
Oh, that's ridiculous, guys. A horse that can talk?
Next thing you're going to tell me is that he can surf, and skateboard, and play shortstop for the Yankees.
And hit a homer against Sandy Koufax. But again, another episode.
Yeah. Okay, so Amanda's going on a date with some guy who is just, well, it's a teenager on Fox, use your imagination, trying to get into her pants. Anyway! So Ed hears this, and Ed and Wilbur team up to basically scare this guy off. And of course, because it's a teenager on Fox, Amanda's a little bit miffed about that. And it just turns out, well, she found somebody who's way cooler than he is anyway. Oh boy. I have a feeling that I know where this is going.
Yeah, it's not going to end well.
And here's the thing. All through the episode, Wilbur's thinking, I got to get rid of this horse. I think I'm going crazy.
Why would he want to get rid of the horse that can talk? Why would you want to get rid of the talking horse?
Because it makes him think he's crazy.
And really, also, it makes his wife think he's crazy.
And his kids.
Yeah, because the wife actually comes into the barn where Wilbur and Mr. Ed are talking, and she says, who are you talking to? Oh, I'm just talking to myself. It's like, okay, that's weird.
Why would his wife think he's nuts? I mean, come on. I mean, Wilbur's wife has seen some crazy stuff down in the Black Lodge, let me tell you. I mean, come on. I mean, she knows that this is the water and this is the well. Drink full and descend.
Firewalk with me.
Yes.
Anyway, so ultimately, Wilbur decides, you know what? We're gonna keep the horse. And before Carlotta and Wilbur have a roll in the hay, as it were.
Roll in the hay.
Yeah. He has to get out of there before Ed gets a front row ticket to the show, knowing what we know about, well, Ed. Know what I mean?
I hear you, Vern.
Well, what you don't know about Ed is he's got a bottle of liquor in his stall, and he decides to share it at one point with Wilbur.
Because it's 2004 on Fox.
Yep.
Drunk horse.
And that was pretty much it for Mr. Ed. I mean, it was a classic premise turned on its head almost. It was just, it's like, it was one of those pre-millennial baking on nostalgia to get an audience. And y'all know what I'm talking about. Because, as I like to say on this show, nostalgia is not a suitable substitute for plot development.
No, it is not.
And that was Mr. Ed. Mike, you had some thoughts on this.
Okay, yes. First off, the CGI movements of Mr. Ed's mouth. They're not as natural as the good old days when you stick some Jif peanut butter right up in his craw and Mr. Ed's suffering to get it out of his upper lip.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that part where Mr. Ed is on the phone.
Yeah, I mean, it looks totally, well, I don't want to say totally unnatural.
That is probably 100% CG. Probably.
It is 100% CG.
Oh, it's definitely CG, yeah.
And very bad mid-2000s CG.
But then also, at the end, talking about the boyfriend, they ultimately scare off the boyfriend because Mr. Ed is pretending to be the voice of the daughter, and she tells the boyfriend in the barn, take off your shirt. And he's, you know, not too suspicious. You know, why is your voice so gravelly? You know, what's wrong with your voice? Just do what I'm telling you to do. Take off your shirt and cover yourself with peanut butter. And
I see what you did there.
Well, thankfully, that was just about the extent of it. Mr. Ed didn't eat the peanut butter off of. Oh, gosh, I can't believe I just said that. I can't believe Mr. Ed. No. No, that's going to be edited out. No, it's not.
No. Mike's having a crisis of conscience, people.
Yeah, I just can't believe that Mr. Ed didn't, like, lick the peanut butter off of him.
That would have been the ultimate, I see what you did there, Fox.
That would have been, well, there are also some very, I don't know, kind of disturbing moments, especially when you consider that Amanda, the daughter, is like 16 in this, so she's, you know, underage. Specifically the part where, when talking about the boyfriend or talking about you can't see the boyfriend, that Wilbur notices that she has a belly button ring. Really? Is that something that needs to be known about a 16-year-old?
No.
And also, I think there's at least one reference to her being a stripper at some point.
Oh, for the no.
Yeah. Again, Fox edginess / Fox inappropriateness.
Yeah. There's not good wholesome Fox Entertainment in the early 2000s, like future installment, the first annual Miss Dog pageant.
Oh, jeez! Or previous installment, Greg the Bunny.
Or previous installment, It's Your Chance of a Lifetime.
There you go. But in the end, actually, there was a big debate. Wilbur wanted to stay at the barn that was purchased, and the family wanted to go back to New York City. In the end, they decided they were going to stay at the barn.
Aww.
It's almost like Green Acres. Goodbye, city life. Green Acres, we are there.
Surprised they didn't try to reboot that.
Yeah, but you don't have someone as great as Eva Gabor in it.
True.
No, yeah, you don't have Eddie Albert or Eva Gabor. This is, this is definitely something on TV.
It was almost a thing on TV, you see.
Yeah.
Almost.
And also, the whole time, there's also, you know, a little bit of a subplot here in terms of, and we mentioned it earlier, the family wanted to get rid of Mr. Ed, and ultimately in the end, let's keep Mr. Ed. And this happened as Jim Hendry, who owned the property originally, was coming to get Mr. Ed, and they say, whoa, hold on, Jim. You know what? We've grown attached to Mr. Ed. Let's keep him.
Aww. He's like a part of the family now.
He is a part of the family, absolutely.
That only Wilbur can talk to.
Yeah, but also can scare the dickens out of the boyfriend after the boyfriend slathers peanut butter on his bare chest.
Bringing that up. Now you have an obvious plot hole is obvious. The secret is Wilbur is the only one who knows that Mr. Ed can talk.
Yeah, that does sort of ruin it, doesn't it?
And yet, he's able to talk to Amanda's boyfriend from the shadows, but still.
Gee, you don't think Amanda's boyfriend's going to figure out, gee, man, it clearly wasn't her dad or her mom or her brother that was talking. Gee, who else could it be? Could it be that weird horse that lives with them? No, I don't think it could be.
Well, but remember, as I said earlier, the boyfriend heard this and said, you know, is your voice okay? And she said something to the extent of, you know, I'm feeling a little down or something like that.
I'm feeling a little hoarse.
Oh, jeez! Damn it, Chico!
Nailed it!
Yes, you did. Why does the daughter sound so different? Okay, listen to this reason.
I'm listening.
She just got her tongue pierced.
Equally plausible.
I like your idea that her voice was just a little hoarse.
That's just comedy gold right there. I mean, come on.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe you went there, but I'm so glad you did. Oh my. Let's put this one to rest, and by that I mean, let's not turn it into dog food.
So this episode's not going to a very special farm upstate?
Let's just put the... Well, I can't believe I'm going to say this. Let's put this show in the can. Oh, jeez.
I have no idea why you just said this, but whatever.
Can a dog food.
To borrow a Chico term, Mike, go to your room.
Oh, Greg did it. No.
Okay, so Mr. Ed was almost a thing on TV.
Yes.
And thank heavens it wasn't. This was bad.
Terrible.
Mike, I got a question.
Okay.
Would you rather watch this or Manimal?
Well, I already saw this. I mean, I saw the whole pilot and I saw the whole thing. Would I want to see this again? No. No, this just like peed over the legacy of, as we said earlier, Alan Young and the original Mr. Ed. And just the antics, and as Chico mentioned earlier, the whole secret that Wilbur's the only person that could hear Mr. Ed, that got thrown out the window with the the scene with the boyfriend in the barn with the peanut butter all over his chest.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not the only one who just found that a little bit off-putting.
So yeah, I mean that's the whole premise of the original series, is the only person who can hear Mr. Ed is Wilbur. And that's out the window 16 minutes into this pilot.
Hmm.
Well, okay, so you'd rather watch Manimal. Okay, good. Good that I want. Good to know.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Episode 55, submission number 211. Look Well was an unsold pilot that aired on NBC on July 28th, 1991. What can I say about this pilot except, Greg, you're a big fan of Barry.
Yes.
Imagine Barry, but Henry Winkler is played by Adam West.
And there's no serial killer.
In fact, quite the opposite. Adam West is a washed-up has-been. I'm sorry, he plays a washed-up has-been.
No, you're right the first time.
Well, he's a washed-up has-been who played a washed-up has-been. In fact, a quick look at the opening 10 seconds sees a poster of his show with the NBC Snake logo, which, by the way, nice touch there.
Yep.
And what it looks like also is a happening late 70s, early 80s sort of Ken doll haircut.
Yeah.
So before we get too deep into the plot, which we will, let's talk about how this thing got started, because this was a show with a pedigree.
Oh, yes.
It was a show with a pedigree. It was created by two people you may have heard of, Conan O'Brien and Robert Schmeigel.
Wait a minute, Chico. Conan O'Brien, yes, is that
Conan O'Brien.
Are you talking about the guy who played the bongos in a skit on SNL with Wayne Gretzky?
I'm talking about the guy who hosted a talk show that hosted Bart Simpson when he was the I Didn't Do It Kid.
Right before the I Didn't Do It Kid went on Match Game 2034 with the vivacious head of Kitty Carlisle.
Let's play the game. That Conan O'Brien. And of course, Robert Schmeigel, who created Previous Entry TV Funhouse.
And was on Previous Entry, the Dana Carvey Show.
Yep, they all did this. So like I said, oh, and it was produced by Lorne Michaels.
Yep.
No explanation needed.
So you have a you have a comedy pedigree responsible for the show, and you have as the lead Adam West, who, I mean, come on. What more needs to be said about Adam West?
Adam West was the Adam West of Adam Wests.
Yes.
Probably because William Shatner wasn't available.
No, this was 1990. Yeah, he would be doing Rescue 911 for CBS. Yes.
Yeah, he would have been on another network. But, I mean, the way I look at it, if Adam West doesn't do Look Well, the perfect actor in place of Adam West would be William Shatner. But, yeah, he was busy doing Rescue 911.
The plot is this. Adam West is Ty Lookwell, a washed-up has-been who spends his days A, watching old episodes of his old show, and B, teaching an acting class in Los Angeles. By the way, his show within his show was called Bannigan, and it did look late 70s, early 80s.
Hold up, Chico. Don't you mean Brannigan?
No. Well, maybe Brannigan. Brannigan.
No, he means Bannigan. It's just there's an ongoing joke in the episode at least two or three times where people say, oh, were you Brannigan? No, I was Bannigan.
Sort of like a Brannigan meets Banachek.
Ooh, I didn't think of that. That's pretty clever.
Yep. And it would sound very detective-y too, you know.
So this pilot opens up with a casting call where a guy comes in to the room where the casting call is being held, and she says to the casting agent, secretary, I'm here to audition for Happy Days, The Next Generation.
That just sounds all sorts of wrong right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then the camera pans about 10 seconds later, and you see Adam West wearing this very Fonzie-ish wig. Absolutely, yeah, absurd.
It's like he has his this whole fake wig and a pompadour, and sort of like he's got a leather jacket and he's got a gut, and he's just, yeah, you know,
yeah, method acting there. He's into the part. I mean, if you're gonna play somebody from the 50s, you gotta be committed to your character.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're going to play somebody like, well, that, you know?
Yep. And not shortly thereafter, we find out that somebody's got the part.
Oh.
So what's a kid to do? I don't know.
After Lookwell does not get the audition for Happy Days, The Next Generation, he's driving around in his sweet car.
Yeah, nice convertible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he stops at the luxury car rental place.
Because it was a two-hour rental.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then we get a hint as to the plot of this pilot. We have a police car going passing by as he's bringing the car back because a car was stolen from the rental place. And who is running the rental place?
TV veteran Bart Braverman.
Yes!
What?
Yeah, from Vegas.
Yes. Yup.
Are we talking about Match Game Zone Bart Braverman?
Yes, we are talking about Match Game Zone Bart Braverman.
Well, I was talking about Pastured Plus's Bart Braverman, and, you know, he was on Pastured Plus only because Alan Thicke was never on it.
So, couple of cops, Bart Braverman, and Lookwell. What's the story here?
Well, apparently there's been a rash of stolen cars taken from the car rental place.
That's not good.
No, so Lookwell sort of takes it upon himself. I'm going to take the lead in this. Trust me, I'm a cop. On TV.
He's not a cop. He's not a cop. He just played one on TV. Didn't even stay at a Holiday Inn Express.
Oh, but if you ask him, he's a cop. Not just because he played one on TV. He has an honorary badge. He was given an honorary title back in the 70s.
Oh, that's good enough.
Yeah, so apparently if you have an honorary doctorate, you know, you can practice medicine. Who knew?
That explains a lot these days. So Luckwell goes back into his house while his housekeeper is polishing up an old Bannigan lunchbox.
And he's eating on a what looks like a popsicle, although it is clearly not a popsicle, and watching old episodes of Bannigan from NBC on NBC. Because you remember that logo.
Yeah, and he's got like every episode on VHS.
And not... a few episodes on like reels.
Yeah. He must have like an old 35mm projector somewhere.
And he's using it to screen episodes in his acting class.
Maybe it was just me, guys, but when he put one of the videotapes into the VCR, did you notice the tape didn't go fully into the VCR and it started playing?
Yes, I noticed it too. Maybe he has one of those like fancy VCRs that doesn't close all the way.
Yeah.
Or maybe his VCR is just kind of screwy.
Maybe. But we get the opening for Bannigan, and holy crap, that's it's an amazing opening style of a 70s show.
And Adam West certainly has the 70s hair going on in this opening.
Yeah.
We're going to play the theme right here. That is a bop, to quote Chico.
It is indeed a bop.
So then we go to Ty Lookwell's acting workshop, which is downstairs, second door on the left, and it has a picture of his face on it.
Not unlike Henry Winkler and Barry.
Yes.
And as we go into the acting workshop, we see him screening an episode of Bannigan.
Yes, it's one of the film prints, actually, that we saw in his closet.
And then he stops the class midway and gets an idea about what happened to all those stolen cars. So here he is at the police station, tells them what he knows. They don't take him seriously, so he flashes his badge, which, by the way, is... It's in a Perspex sort of trophy case looking thing.
Yeah, it's in like acetate or lucite. Almost like a miniature trophy of sorts.
Yeah. In fact, it says presented to Ty Lookwell, TV's Bannigan.
Bannigan.
I'm just telling you what the trophy reads.
Oh, that's definitely a Conan O'Brien, Robert Smigel thing. I love it. And this isn't the first time we're going to see that lucite police badge pop up.
So we meet Detective Henry, who is the technical advisor on Bannigan.
Yep. And again, like Ty Lookwell, he looks like he's seen better days. I mean, he's got the furrowed brow, he's got a gut, he's in a suit now. He's gone from working these mean streets to pushing pencils.
And Lookwell is insistent that he's going to solve this case, even though he's not a cop.
Yeah.
And then we get to the first commercial. No, we're not going to talk about the commercials today. We could, but we're not.
We're not, but sorry.
So once we get back from the commercial break, immediately we're in a restaurant, a lot of celebrity photos on the wall, signed photos like you'd see it in, you know, diners in New York City or Los Angeles or maybe a dry cleaner or something like that. And we see Lookwell, and he's having a meal with some of his students, specifically some of the students that did like a recreation, did their own acting of what Lookwell was teaching in his acting class earlier in the show. And yeah. Actually, if you take a look, maybe it's me, but behind Adam West's left shoulder, it looks like there's a headshot of Ty Luke.
Oh, that's no accident.
That's that intentional.
Is... No, I get that. It was just an observation that right behind his left shoulder is a headshot of himself as Ty Lookwell. I thought that was clever. Again, yeah. Another Conan O'Brien touch.
I don't know what was more enjoyable, that or the picture of Bob Saget that was among those headshots.
So, we're at the body shop now where we see, well... Lookwell looking like?
He looks ridiculous.
He looks like a milkman from the 50s.
He does!
Hold on.
Then we get to what
that reminds me of?
What?
Future installment TV Land's Milkman, or Nick at Night's Milkman.
The foulest milkman!
You don't remember the milkman? In the jingles and the ads?
I didn't get TV Land at the time.
Oh, he was like their kind of mascot.
Oh.
Delivering TV goodness to your house every night.
Delivering milk and hope to a world gone sour.
Oh.
Lookwell's undercover, as we said, he looks like a milkman, really, kind of, sort of. And he's doing his undercover work at an auto painting shop.
At a body shop. Yeah.
More auto painting than body shop, from what I saw. And the name of the shop is Carl Schwab's. Clearly a takeoff of Earl Scheib's. Remember those?
No. Mm-hmm.
Damn it, Greg, you're so young. Earl Scheib used to, say, I'll paint any car for $19.99 or something to that extent. It was something that was around up until probably the mid to late 90s. I remember seeing an Earl Scheib shop around here. You'll just have to take our word for it, Greg.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Adam West is painting the car. He asked the proprietors of the shop if there's anything else he can do.
Giggity?
But don't forget the head nod. The head nod.
Yeah. Any special jobs that need extra attention? Hey.
Mm-hmm.
Just give him the signal.
Yeah. It's like, is T wearing a wire? I don't know. Let's beat him up. Next scene, he's in the class and he's all bandaged up and...
Wait. They're all veiled sex references that go by the censors in 1991.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. That's the joke.
Okay, continue, Chico.
They are now back in the class. And Lookwell is working with... somebody who looks like a B-level Julie Brown, the comedian, not the DJ. And I think he just got another clue inadvertently from another student. The LA Grand Prix is here Sunday.
Oh. Auto race in town.
Big auto race. Big cars, auto racing cars. I'm gonna get some neat.
So now we go to the LA Grand Prix, and oh my god, if you thought Lookwell looking like a milkman was ridiculous enough, the outfit he has at the LA Grand Prix.
He looks like one of the Wright brothers.
Yes.
Yeah, he looks like he's gonna drive in the Indy 500 circa about 1928. With the scarf.
Did they even have the scarf and the goggles. Did they even have the Indy 500 in 1928?
Yeah, the first one, I believe, was 1919.
Okay.
So there you go. And he's climbing a fence now, so it's like, oh god, what's good? And ultimately, he ends up in prison, and his student is literally shoved around, not even for sakes, he's shoved around for fun.
And he's being shoved by two really big guys.
Oh, yeah. Two big men.
Big guys. He's a big guys.
Yeah, moral of the story, please, at the Grand Prix, don't try trespassing by climbing the fence, especially if you're an actor in his late 50s, early 60s at this point.
Yeah. And he's flashing his badge again. In the Lucite case. And this leads to several minutes of reflection. Of white-suited George Pappard-looking reflection. That he looks like George Pappard is Banachek, doesn't he?
Well, again, you said earlier that Banigan is Banachek plus Branigan, so that's possibly what they're going for here.
Possibly.
So as Lookwell is reflecting, he stops by the one place he can turn to, a statue of William Shakespeare. So as Lookwell talks about how he looks to Shakespeare for some wisdom, we get a flash cut implying that he's been talking to the Shakespeare statue for a very, very long time. Discussing the situation. Yes, discussing his particular situation.
Like, what's he going to do? What in the world is he going to do?
After spending some serious time with the Shakespeare statue and thinking about his next move, we see Lookwell and the Julie Brown-ish acting school character at a benefit, at a homeless benefit, and Lookwell goes undercover, and he masters the part. He portrays a homeless individual, complete with looking very shabby, with a bindle. He's got the bindle on the stick and all that. He's playing the part. And also at this benefit happens to be the auto rental shop owner, Alberti, who was played by Bart Braverman.
The Julie Brownish character is Miss Royster, played by Deborah Richter. So Miss Royster and Lookwell, the hobo, are being chased down by the police, and it turns out the police had a man on the inside.
Well, it goes a little bit deeper than that, because the reason the police are chasing Lookwell is because Lookwell decides to go into a car, essentially breaking into a car. He wanted to hide in Alberti's vehicle, but Alberti happened to be like on a balcony or some overlook, and he sees this happening. He says, "Hey, get out of my car." And so instead of hiding in the car, they decide to take the car. And from there, the police pursuit begins.
Ooh.
And the police pursuit ends up taking them all the way to the auto repair shop. And what they happen to see at the auto repair shop is somebody who works there after hours. Why is he there when the auto rental place is closed? Yeah, after hours.
Yeah.
He couldn't be behind all these stolen cars, could he?
Probably.
Yeah, it turns out that yes, he was.
So, quite accidentally, our man Lookwell manages to save the day. Again, quite accidentally.
Yep.
Now, and that is the story of Lookwell.
Well, hold up. As Lookwell says, it's been a pleasure working with them. And if they need anything, he gives them his headshot.
Of course he does. Because, well, Ty Lookwell, he was a fake actor with a lot of headshots.
And as the credits close, we have the shot of Lookwell watching his show while eating his popsicle.
Yeah, this is the show that Brandon Tartikoff championed, but Warren Littlefield really didn't for some reason. In some ways, this show was way ahead of its time because it was filmed as a single camera at a time where single camera sitcoms were not a thing just yet. I don't recall like when it exactly became this big thing, the single camera sitcom, but this was one of the first. And not many people picked up on the idea that, hey, this could work because it's really good and really solid. But Robert Schmeigel went on to say, would viewers really want to view that every week?
Potentially. I mean, it depends how much more plot development there is beyond the pilot. I mean, it was funny, but, you know, very, you know, rudimentary. You know, could you do that for 26 episodes a year? I don't know.
It was IFC before IFC was IFC.
But also, the ratings. It aired on a Sunday night. I think Adam West actually said it aired at 7 o'clock on Sunday night.
Oh,
which,
boy.
Yeah.
That is like a black mark unless your name is 60 Minutes. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there's just a little show called 60 Minutes there. And actually for that week, out of 92 shows,
it ranked dead last.
90 wow. seconds.
2.3 million viewers, which today, if you got 2.3 million viewers in 2020, you might as well be the number one show on television.
But you're dead last in 1991. And that means you lost to all the Fox shows. And that's when Fox was really struggling to find an audience.
So, Mike, you're saying that it even lost to future installment Totally Hidden Video.
It lost to all sorts of future entries. Every show beat it. That's how underwatched it was, as it were.
Oh my god, are you serious? But if you think that this is the end of the Lookwell story, you know where I'm going with this. It went underground. It went underground. It became what we like to call found footage. So it found its way to Trio's brilliant but canceled block. And it's since become a bit of a cult classic. How one episode of one show could become a cult classic is beyond me, but here we are. Thoughts, Greg, Mike?
Well, obviously, as we mentioned, this is a show that was obviously ahead of its time, given who wrote this show and given the concept. I mean, even though it's a very different show from this, I mean, Barry is kind of like a similar plot, kind of.
Similar. Like I said, actor with sort of a dualish life wants to be an actor. He's a hitman. In this case, Lookwell was an acting coach who wanted to be a police officer or a detective. I'm not confusing anybody, am I?
Yeah. Unfortunately, the one thing Lookwell doesn't have going for it compared to Barry, there's no character as great as North Hollywood Hank.
This is true. Barry has a whole lot of characters and a whole lot of sketchy figures and an intertangled plot, and it is brilliant for what it is 30 years after Lookwell graced the screens. But before all of Lookwell could become a cult classic, it was a thing on TV.
Yep.
And it was a great thing on TV. Too bad nobody watched it.
Yeah.
That's not true. 2.3 million people watched it, or at least had it on in the background while they were doing something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also it was beat by Totally Hidden Video that week. I rest my case.
Well, what can we say? Look, well, probably the greatest unsold pilot that never made the series. So much talent between Adam West, Conan O'Brien, Robert Schmeigel, Lorne Michaels. But hey, at least we got one episode out of it, and it was great. And we got Adam West dressing like a homeless man and a milkman. What more could you ask for in an unsold pilot? In part two of the special Pop Goes the Classic Series on the James Bond Legacy, Scott Crisco and Rob Piontek discuss the other men who were James Bond besides the quote-unquote Big Four. They talk about replacing both Sean Connery and Roger Moore and the impact it had on the James Bond franchise and the actors' legacies. And in the inaugural episode of Piece of the Action, host Matt Souza welcomes guest Jennifer Smith to watch the 1999 classic The Matrix. Listen as Matt and Jenny talk about Keanu Reeves, The Color Green, jacking in. Where's Ty Luckwell when you need him to give veiled sexual references? Red pills, blue pills, soul patches, Morpheus monologues, and so much more on the debut edition of Piece of the Action. In the 23rd episode of Laughing Theater, Andy Afferton was joined by Peter Winston from Greetings from Allentown to do a live watch of the 1985 action-adventure comedy The Goonies. The guys discussed the best fonts, Canadian tuxedos, Oregon foreclosure law, units of measurement, poor counterfeiting, booby traps, Mom Fratelli's motherly love, ice cream flavors, the Spielberg voice, Jake Fratelli's hazard pay, Andy's best of seven series with the bone piano, water slide rules, and the best places to hide jewels on your person, and international maritime salvage laws. I'll tell you what, knowing Peter Winston, I guarantee you he's going to go at least 5 minutes in depth on the intricacies of foreclosure law in the state of Oregon, let me tell you. Also, be sure to check out the PTPN wrestling feed, which includes a dive into topics running the gamut from the days WWE through yesteryear. The feed includes the Place to Be podcast, main event, Jenny and the Gems, Body Pressure Luck, PTB NXT, the NWA Saturday Special, and so much more. Subscribe today. And while you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed as well. It is the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, and more. Also, check out the new North-South Connection brought to you by GT Rosero and Chad Campbell. It is the new home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme, Three-Way Dance, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and more. And on our social media pages, the greatest junk food tournament is going on. Keep tabs on the tournament Facebook page for details. And we have kicked off the 2020 stretch project determining the greatest WCW match ever. You have all year to do research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. And be sure not to forget to check out PlaceToBeNation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes, bringing you articles on topics in the world of wrestling, sports, and pop culture, including Trent's SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in the WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Jason's DVD Deep Dive, Ben's Unpopular Opinion. Don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. And also, if you're doing shopping over at Amazon.com, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use www.placetobenation.com/Amazon. It'll take you right to Amazon and helps out P2PN at no cost to you. Okay, so we have done a talking horse. We've done Ty Luckwell, and now we are on our final pilot of our series of Unsold Pilots, and we're going to be covering a bizarre pilot from 1990 that was executive produced by the late, great John Ritter and stars the late, great Peter Boyle as a police detective whose soul gets transported into a dog. That's right, I'm talking about Paczynski. Enjoy this one, folks.
Episode 56, Submission 1300, Paczynski. Paczynski was an unsold pilot that aired on NBC the night of July 9th, 1990.
Car 307, proceed to Magnitude Savings. Interrogate another Instapella robbery victim.
Hey, who's this?
I'm Casey, the new dispatcher.
Casey? Anyone ever tell you you've got a real sexy voice?
All the time, Paczynski.
Hey, how do you know who I am?
I read all about you on the bathroom wall.
See, male, Caucasian, medium size and build, any distinctive features.
Well, guys, I think we have saved, I guess, the
best for last?
Best is purely in the eyes of the beholder.
Yeah. This is just a weird pilot about a man who's a cop and he dies and then his spirit goes into a dog and then he's got to team up with his partner while reincarnated as a dog, and it's just weird.
It is very bizarre. It made even more bizarre when you see Peter Boyle, who would go on to be the patriarch of Everybody Loves Raymond, as the hardest cop this side of wherever this is.
Yeah. By the way,
it's
guys,
It's Chicago.
The hardest cop on the mean streets of Chicago. And what does he see that just absolutely melts his heart? A dog that thinks, acts, and looks just like him. What is he, a pit bull?
Yeah, it's a bulldog.
It's a bulldog, yeah. It's a bulldog. Watched enough WWF wrestling to know what a bulldog is. R.I.P. Davey Boy.
And Stanley Puchinsky, Peter Boyle's character, first meets this bulldog in alley when Puchinsky, the cop, goes towards some teens who are just generally roughhousing, causing issues, and one of the teens pulls out a switchblade on him, and Puchinsky pulls out a gun, and guess what, guys? Gun always wins in that case. And after he's, scared off the teens, there's this bulldog sitting there, and Puchinsky has a hot dog he got from a street vendor earlier, and he gives the dog the hot dog.
Aww.
So you can already see the dog is sort of like him, eating nitrates and stuff like that. Not good for you.
No, it isn't. But I'm not going to tell you how to live your life.
Thanks, Mom! So they bond, and Puchinsky, the dog, well, we'll just call him the dog, because I don't think he technically has a name at this point.
No, he still doesn't have a name. No, he doesn't have a name until he, like, Puchinsky's spirit goes into the dog.
Right.
So we see the cop car pull up with Puchinsky and his partner, Robert McKay, played by George Newbern, and Puchinsky's just in the back and he's just playing with his dog.
They're bonding. Isn't that cute?
Yeah. Like I said, they're like each other's spirit animal, it looks like.
Is that foreshadowing? Wink, wink.
Maybe? Possibly? But we'll get to that.
So Detective McKay, Puchinsky's partner, goes into the office of the captain, who's played by Frank McRae. And Frank McRae, who you'd best know best, is, hey, it's that guy from a bunch of various things in the 80s and 90s. But Detective McKay is like, I don't want to be with Puchinsky anymore. I want to transfer. He just breaks wind constantly. And then the captain's like, the dog? No, Sergeant Puchinsky. So then we cut to Puchinsky, and he's looking at a woman in the office. Like, oh. But the captain says, there's a lot you can learn from Puchinsky. So start your education immediately. So then we cut to Detective McKay and Puchinsky as they're on a stakeout.
Yeah, and what do they eat during the stakeout? They get a pizza delivery, and what's on the pizza? Pineapple and shrimp. Okay, one...
See, pineapple I totally get, but shrimp?
Okay, well, one, ew, shrimp. But two, you wonder why Puchinsky the cop is so gassy and flatulent? Okay. That shrimp on a pizza does not sound terribly appetizing.
No. And then Puchinsky gives his partner a picture of a lady that he met during Vice.
So what happens is during this stakeout, they actually witness somebody holding up a customer at an ATM. And Puchinsky starts going after them. He says, I'm a cop. He's got his gun. He radios to headquarters. And the robber goes into a used car dealership. And he actually steals one of the cars, I'm going to assume. Hotwires it, or probably didn't have the keys, obviously. And he hits Puchinsky. And it's not looking too good.
Puchinsky notices that the robber is about to run over the dog. And so in an effort, Puchinsky runs over, picks up the dog, saves its life. But in the process, poor Puchinsky gets run over by the car and his head smashes into the windshield.
And then as Puchinsky is sitting on the ground, him and the dog lock eyes. And for a good 15 seconds, you just see Puchinsky staring at the dog in the eyes, and the dog is staring back, and then back to Puchinsky, and then back to the dog. And then next thing you know, Puchinsky, he goes unconscious. He falls unconscious on the ground, and unfortunately, he ends up dying.
Yeah, but not before he dies, though. Puchinsky, in one final act, before he looks at the dog, asks his partner, Detective McKay, to take his Chicago Cubs tickets. Because priorities.
Very sad.
Well, 1990, I don't think was a particularly good year for the Cubs, but that was the year Jerome Walton was Rookie of the Year for the Cubs, so maybe he wanted to see Jerome Walton play.
I could totally see that.
Well, it was also the year of the 1990 MLB All-Star Game at Wrigley Field. By the way, future installment, the 1990 MLB All-Star Game. Because that game got rained, had a rain delay, and then Rescue 911 aired for like an hour.
But then we see a bunch of fog. We don't see Puchinsky in the hospital. Next thing we see, they cut to his funeral.
Oh.
Yeah. And we don't even really hear much of the funeral. We just see a mass of people. And then ultimately later, we see Puchinsky's partner by himself, still grieving.
It's very sad.
It's, yeah. And then, just out of nowhere, we hear Puchinsky's voice. Who said that? Where did that come from? And believe it or not, the voice came from the bulldog, because Puchinsky's spirit, his soul, entered the dog after he died.
Okay, I have questions, Mike.
Okay, we're going to stop right here because I think we all have questions.
Yes, we all have questions. The chair recognizes Greg.
Okay. Puchinsky has only known this dog for one day. How does his spirit enter into the dog? Is it like black magic? Is it the same kind of weird hocus pocus TV stuff that made Rodney Dangerfield connected to Rodney Barnes? What's up with this?
Well, I really think that in that 15-second staring interlude, the eye contact interlude I mentioned earlier, I think somehow that was sort of the transportation or the connection of Puchinsky's soul to the dog's soul, and it transferred to the dog as soon as he passed.
Guys, I think I figured out why. Okay? Now hear me out.
Go ahead.
I think that this was all planned by St. Peter, and he decided to transfer Puchinsky's soul into the dog.
That's a couple weeks from now, dude.
It's 1 week from now, baby. You think after St. Peter was done having Kyle Morton fix his past self played by Matthew Perry's life, he decided, you know what? You know what I'm going to do next? I'm going to have a police detective soul transfer into a dog that he's only known for one day.
You know what? That's actually quite plausible.
It's a reference for next week.
Yeah. I know. We literally talked about this 30 seconds ago, Greg and me.
So after the funeral, and Detective McKay and Puchinsky the dog have a nice thorough talk, they go back to headquarters. And at headquarters, one of the first people they run into is Sergeant Shriver.
Wait a minute. Hold up. Sergeant Shriver, George McGovern's running mate, is in that police office.
Now, you see, I was going to say the exact same thing. Of all the names, you had to use that. And that was a long-running joke on Carson back in the 70s, if you watch his old reruns. But yeah, Sergeant Shriver, they didn't even give him a first name. Sergeant Shriver was the nemesis of Detective McKay and Puchinsky.
I believe the term you're looking for is deuteragonist.
The rival. Yes,
I was reading today.
Yes, you looked at the Oxford English Dictionary, not the kindergarten dictionary today. And we should note Sergeant Shriver was played by Brian Haley, who's one of those people when you look at him, you say, "I know that guy from that place."
Yep, exactly.
And just a couple of places where you've seen him. First, on the Drew Carey Show in a season one episode, he played a Drew Carey lookalike. And he looks just like him, just a little bit taller and a little bit younger. But also, believe it or not, if you've been watching Buzzer as of late, Brian Haley actually appeared on 3 episodes of Classic Concentration in 1988.
What?
I'm dead serious. He won, I believe, 3 games of Classic Concentration. He ended up winning about $11,000 in prizes. And he actually said, you know, I'm a stand-up comedian. So it's a natural move to go from stand-up comedy to a sitcom like this. And he actually had his big break kind of sort of on Carson in 1990. But yeah, 2 years earlier, he was on Classic Concentration. And those episodes did air on Buzzer in the very recent past, within the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 months as of time of recording.
Oh, yeah, because you watch Concentration on your lunch break.
Well, when I was working.
Oh, you know what? You know
yeah,
who else he was on? He was Mr. Stone in future installment. Great Scott with Tobey Maguire.
Oh, yes. Oh, man. Probably the only time we'll ever talk about Tobey Maguire on this podcast.
He was on 307, 308, and 309.
Oh, what a crew cut he's got on for this.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like Drew Carey, for heaven's sakes. He does.
Wow. Wow.
He looks like Drew Carey, a little younger, a little taller.
A little thinner.
Significantly fitter, absolutely.
Brian Haley was the Hooded Avenger on the Weird Al Show.
What? Wait, is the Weird Al show on the list?
Oh, it sure is. It absolutely is.
Damn.
Yeah. Drew Carey's little brother.
It's really goofy what you see or who you see when you watch TV all the time. Seeing a Puchinsky and then saying, hey, I know that guy from Classic Concentration. And lo and behold, boom, I'm right for once.
So now we go back. And what is Puchinsky doing?
He's sort of having his way with the secretary, it looks like.
Oh.
Our dog is being a little horn dog.
Yeah.
Our dog is a dog.
He's doing what he couldn't do when he was a human.
I wonder if he's fixed.
God, I hope so.
Not if he's going after the secretary like that.
Oh.
Yeah.
So now we cut back to Detective McKay's apartment, where we meet Amy Yazbeck's character of Franny and her daughter. Because earlier, while Detective McKay and Puchinsky were on their stakeout, he mentioned that he was seeing somebody, a girl named Franny.
Aww.
You mean the same Amy Yazbeck who was a regular panelist on the I've Got a Secret reboot by Oxygen 20 years ago?
Oh, we really have to cover that. Oh.
I didn't say future entry. I just said, is that the Amy Yazbeck from the I've Got a Secret reboot from Oxygen did 20 years ago? That's all I said.
Yes. It's the Amy Asbeck from one episode of Worst Week, which was the American version of The Worst Week of My Life, which may or may not be on the list. I don't know.
Well, plus also we should mention that Amy
Michelle Lackerson on future installments, Life on a Stick.
Well, we should also mention that Amy Yesbeck is the widow of John Ritter.
Yes. Yep.
And also, who's one of the EPs on this show? John Ritter.
Yeah. So this explains a lot.
This might have been the pilot that was shot before she finally landed wings. Oh, God. That was terrible. I'm going to go to my room now.
Hey. Hey. Glenn Clagmire loved Wings, Chico. It made Tony Shalhoub's career.
Love Wings!
And then you're going to cut to Cleveland saying, was this a cartoon?
Detective McKay and Franny, they were in an elevator. That's where they were talking. And Puchinsky the dog wraps his leash around the two of them, sort of hinting that, hey, you'd be a cute couple. And Franny's daughter the whole time is just laughing, giggling. Oh, look how cute it is. The doggy's wrapping his leash around the two of them. Totally unbeknownst to the subtle semi-sexual context.
Because she's a kid. She doesn't know any better.
No, she doesn't. So after McKay and Franny talk in the elevator and Puchinsky wraps his leash around the two, McKay and Puchinsky go back into McKay's apartment and they have an argument because McKay says, you're only staying here until this case is done and then I'm getting rid of you. And Puchinsky says that he's a better cop with four legs than McKay is with two. And that pisses him off, and McKay kicks Puchinsky out of the apartment.
Yeah, but not before Puchinsky decides to watch Huckleberry Hound.
Oh, yes, he was watching Huckleberry Hound right before this argument happened.
Mm-hmm.
And Puchinsky goes into the elevator, says, floor 5, please, which I'm going to presume is where Franny's apartment is. And the guy hits 5, and once they get to 5, Puchinsky says thank you. The person's reading a newspaper, and he doesn't know who's even in there. He just heard this voice. So, unlike Mr. Ed, everybody can hear Puchinsky.
Yeah.
Unless it's Mr. Ed from 2004. Last week's episode.
The guy reading the paper, he was like Tom Post and on the Super Match on Match Game.
What?
It always goes back to Tom Poston.
Yep.
So after presumably going to Franny's apartment, you see Franny, her daughter, and Puchinsky going to McKay's apartment. And Franny says, I'm going to make you dinner. And McKay takes them into the kitchen and closes the door on them. A door in a kitchen. Okay, I've never really seen that.
Nope.
Yeah.
Not a big city Chicago apartment. This is real.
Yeah, this is an interesting setup. I've never seen that.
This is real. This is the streets. This is a dog turning on some mood music.
Yes. This is the song he sang earlier in the car at the stakeout. Everybody needs somebody sometimes.
All right, so they're in the kitchen. Puchinsky's in the bedroom, completely gutting the bed. And all of a sudden, McKay finally gets it. My partner's a dog. My partner is inside this dog. Now the light bulbs are starting to come on, and now the magic can start. Because guess what happens?
What happens?
ATM robbery.
Oh. Yes.
Here comes the chase. Puchinsky's taking the long way, it looks like. Or is it the shortcut? Nope, it's the shortcut. Because after a brief fight scene, here comes a dog. then more fight scene.
And then
I'm waiting for Baczynski to do something. Oh!
Yes! Yeah. Yes! Yes!
There yeah. you. Right. All right. Mommy and daddy okay. button.
Okay. So, there's a fight. Detective McKay punches the ATM robber. And then what happens next? Baczynski goes straight to the robber and bites him right in the never regions.
Well, that robber got neutered.
Oh, yeah, he did indeed.
Oh, yeah.
And that may be the absolute funniest scene in this entire show. It is absolutely hilarious. I'll get to why later, but this was the best moment. I was dead laughing out loud.
So then we cut to a photo of the captain and Detective McKay with Baczynski as the dog has been given a medal for his work in catching the killer of Baczynski, the human.
And then it all ends up at McKay's apartment, and they're watching horse racing on TV.
Wait.
Yeah, say it, Greg.
You mean to say that they were watching horse racing on the TV?
That's exactly what I was expecting from you.
Mm.
And McKay and Baczynski the dog are eating popcorn. Well, one of them is eating popcorn.
Oh, boy. What's the other one doing?
The other one is the dog. And again, we'll get to that in a moment. Oh, yeah, they're watching horse racing and they're arguing about what to watch on TV. And Baczynski gets a little upset because he feels he should have an equal vote to what's on TV. And so he goes after McKay's slipper shoe, takes off with it. And you see McKay chasing Baczynski around the apartment. And that's how the show ends. But now I just need to get this off my chest because, again, as Greg said earlier, many questions.
So many questions.
Yeah.
Yes. So why wasn't the dog eating? Because in this episode, the dog was in some scenes real life, but in others was a very crudely created puppet.
Yes.
And Greg mentioned before the show who did that, and I was absolutely shocked by this.
Yes, the puppet was created by Industrial Light and Magic.
And they're usually like
Lucas guys?
Yes!
Yeah, they're usually at the top of their game. I mean, they're the best of the best. And they created this very crude Baczynski puppet who's really like half a step above like Triumph the Insult comic dog.
Yeah, this one has eyes that can move and blink and stuff.
That's the half step, yeah. But yes, so the dog, when I was saying, you know, didn't really eat the popcorn, he was a puppet. Think of sort of like Cookie Monster, puts the cookie in his mouth, crumble, 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 and then you've got crumbs all over the place. Sort of the same thing in theory. The puppet eats the popcorn, and, well, puppets don't have throats, so he's just like munching on it and it gets all over the place. I don't know how this could have lasted even 13 episodes.
No.
Not just, I'm talking more from a writing standpoint than anything else, but absolutely from the puppet standpoint. I mean, again, didn't even look realistic, even with the blinking and whatnot. I mean, you could tell he was a latex puppet. He was, in essence, Triumph the Insult comic dog 2 or 3 years early.
With a bit of fur, just a little bit of fur.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Absolutely goofy.
And by the way, guys, you're not going to believe this, but the night it aired, it was a double feature. Do you know what this aired alongside?
What did it air?
Don't alongside? Say Where's Rodney.
No. This aired alongside an airing of Turner and Hooch.
Of course it did.
Yeah, because NBC figured, you know what? Everyone tonight, they're gonna watch Cops and Dogs. That's what people are gonna watch.
Well, also, Turner and Hooch would have been still a semi-relevant movie back in 1990. I mean, it was in theaters, what, maybe 2 years earlier?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, about a year and a half earlier, I think, because it was 89.
Yeah, so it was very still timely at the time, and obviously you have the cop and dog police team. Believe it or not, at least one channel declared this the greatest show of all time that never made it.
Really?
Now, mind you, the source is VH1, but they did declare Puchinsky the greatest show of all time that was never made. This is back in 2010. Unfortunately, you know, because it's over 10 years later, the page is now a 404 error. But it is a reference on the Wikipedia page for Puchinsky because, yes, everything has a Wikipedia page nowadays, including unsold TV pilots. Well, I think that's all we have to say about this. So I think Chica might have one or two things to say to close it out.
A dog as a police officer in the 90s. You couldn't throw a stick at a movie theater without having it fetch a dog as a police officer. And surprisingly, it was a thing on TV.
And it's a heck of a way to end this pilot streak we've been on.
As we've said, we'll have more to come with pilots in the near future.
Yes, by this time in 2021, we're going to do more pilots because we've found some real stinkers, some real bizarre ones.
Yep.
But that's for the future. For now, remember you can find all our previous episodes, our links to social media, and more at itwasathingontv.com. Please, as always, rate and review, like and subscribe, and share because
sharing is caring.
As the kids say, absolutely. Until next week. Oh, next week we get back to regular old TV shows that aired for 13 episodes.
And boy, these are two shows that we've been waiting to talk about since we started this podcast back in October.
Oh, but yes.
And one of them is more or less a Greg show, but oh, I'm sure we all have things to say about it.
Yes. In fact, we hinted about it earlier in the episode.
Yes, we did. But again, that's next week. Until then, thank you very much for listening. And we'll be back starting Sunday with two new episodes of It Was a Thing on TV.
Wow!
Everybody loves somebody somehow. Everybody falls in love somehow.
Hey, dummy, not me. Grab the babe. Why don't you just stick me inside a car and roll up the windows?